Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
We're off and rolling. Midweek edition of the Gabe Kuhn Show. September 18, 2024 is the date. It's time to get into it. I am Gabe Kuhn, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside, as always, the executive producer of the show. That'll be Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning 929. Connor, what's the word, brother?
What's up, man?
Nothing much. Nothing much. I think we'll talk about Pac-12 Memphis.
I think so. Just maybe a little bit.
I have a hunch that that's going to be a big topic of conversation today. But we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. As far as guests are concerned, 4:30, we'll probably talk about Memphis to the Pac-12. What could potentially happen there with Colton Denning from Two Stripes CPD, but we also need to get into his Week 3 college football takeaways and look into Week 4. 5 o'clock, similar things with David Cobb from CBS Sports. Then at 6 o'clock, very pleased to be joined by a good friend of mine, very good friend of mine, former safety at the University of Oregon. He actually, we'll play some sound a little bit later, but he actually picked off, in 2021, he picked off C.J. Stroud to seal that game. You'll remember Oregon winning in the Shoe, 35-28. Barone actually had the game-winning, game-clinching interception in that game. So he will join us. He also played for the Dolphins and the Cardinals, so we'll talk about Tua and what he thinks about that whole situation, Mike McDaniel, how it was also. This is something I really want to know. I don't know about you, Connor. In practice, being a DB, having to deal with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle on every play.
Oh, my God.
That would not be fun.
No.
That would not be fun. But I'd imagine it makes you better. We'll talk to Verone around 6 o'clock. The Blitz will be at 6:30. And, of course, we're going to open on overreaction, not an overreaction. And a trip around the NFL, 5:30. We have it all laid out. But let's go ahead and just hop right into it. Let's get to overreaction, not an overreaction.
Mr. Gabe Kuhn.
Yes.
Memphis should leave for the Pac-12. Overreaction or not an overreaction?
No lead up to it. You just went right into
right
it.
Into
I hear
it.
You. I'm going to say not an overreaction. We've learned more. We have learned more. First of all, Tim Pernetti's been in town. And to hear sort of the new AAC commissioner, if you didn't know who that was.
Gabe, it was a long planned trip.
Yeah, long
it, was
planned
a long,
trip.
It was a long planned trip. It has nothing to do with the Pac-12.
He's trying to suck up to Memphis. There's no doubt about it. Like, this is the best brand we have. They can compete on the national stage. We really want them to be a part of our conference. But also, in that same vein, he did say, I'm not worried about the speculation around the Pac-12 or what they have going. Yeah, you're worried about it. Or else you wouldn't have reached out to Air Force to try to, quote-unquote, strengthen. You know, I'm putting that in air quotes, strengthen your conference. Now, I know there's a lot of people that have different thoughts on this about the travel and everything else. How much more money are you making than the AAC contract, which I have seen reported at about $7.5 million per year. I think it goes up year over year until it's done. But a lot of people want those travel costs to be cut if you're going to, cut into by the new TV deal if you end up in the Pac-12. But in the end of the day, it just seems like an open and shut case. This should happen. Football Scoop actually reported yesterday that sources confirmed to them that Memphis officials are keenly interested in an opportunity to join the Pac-12, and their exit fee could be potentially helped by some of the Pac-12 money, the war chest of money they have from all of their 10 different conference members leaving for the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Big 12. So that is the report right now. What really has brought me officially to go under any circumstances, one, the AAC I still think is a dying conference. But two, if you have been looking at Florida State and Clemson and the ACC, there is more reports about the ongoing litigation. And as of yesterday, there is a report that's been published by ESPN and CBS Sports and Yahoo as well about Clemson and Florida State agreeing with the ACC to stay in the conference, but with different sort of bargaining chips that are going to be a part of the new contract. They could get out of that deal in 2030, and also they have a TV ratings-based, you know, payout scale that they're going to go to. So if you get more TV ratings, which Florida State and Clemson always do, you get more money. That's what they wanted from the beginning, and the ACC seems to be sort of bending the knee to that. And if you have been following this, there was some questions about them getting out of the conference. With that report yesterday, it doesn't seem like at least till 2030 they're going to be making any type of move. And with that, why wouldn't you hop into the best possible scenario for yourself? If you don't think that ACC, you know, invite is going to come, then you need to go take care of you. You need to look out for yourself first. And I think with the Pac-12 and all of the schools that are involved there, we know San Diego State and Boise State and Washington State and Oregon State, I think you can get more money. You can get more. Obviously, we need to see who actually is going to come to the table as far as, you know, programming and you know, the types of networks that will get involved. Maybe there's a streaming aspect to it. We need to see what that looks like. But I would imagine it's more than what you're getting in the AAC, and certainly more than what you'd be getting in the AAC if you stayed in there and then renegotiated at the end of the window that the ESPN American TV deal is involved with right now. So I think it's open and shut. And here's something that people haven't been talking about, Connor, at least on the football side. Have you seen the differences in bowl tie-ins between the American and the Pac-12?
I actually have not, no.
So, American has Armed Forces, Bahamas, Birmingham, Boca Raton, Fenway, Frisco, Gasparilla, Military, First Responders. Pac-12 has Holiday, Independence, the L.A. Bowl, which is an unannounced sort of payout, the Las Vegas, the Sun Bowl, and the Alamo. The lowest payout in the Pac-12 right now for the current bowl tie-ins, $2.2 million. The highest payout for the American, $2.06 million.
Oh, wow.
So if you end up in some of these, like the Holiday Bowl, you get $6.5 million. Independence, $2.2 million. Las Vegas, $2.9 million. Sun Bowl, $4.5 million. Alamo Bowl, $8.25 million. The bowl payouts are substantially higher. It's not even particularly close. Now, I know those bowl games can sort of step to the table and renegotiate with other conferences, but at the at this current moment, they still have those tie-ins, and it would make a whole lot of sense for Memphis to go over there if you feel like you're going to make a bowl every year, which I still think they can, in a conference that's made up with the members that they have right now in the Pac-12. You feel a lot better about, once you get to postseason play, getting that type of payout as opposed to going to the Bahamas Bowl and making $225,000 for a payout. That doesn't even cover your travel and your resort stay, any of that. So I feel like the bowl tie-ins are something we have neglected to discuss but need to be discussed.
Absolutely. First off, if Memphis becomes part of the new Pac-12, it sounds like that we need to go by Memphis State again just to go along with the trends. Right. But listen, I totally understand why some people are hesitant to make the jump to the Pac-12 because of what happened with the Big East. Memphis jumped in the Big East, and then it dissolved before your eyes, and then you were stuck there again. However, with the TV deal ending in 2031 with the American and with this new Pac-12, I just have to believe that you have got to go and do what is best for yourself right now, and you can't wait for to be quite honest right now, what feels like a pipe dream with a group, because or with the power conference, because I just don't think the Big 12's ever going to come a calling anytime soon. And then the ACC, it sounds like your hope
they're
was
a little
that
more stabilized
Florida
than
State, Clemson was
going to
take off, and that's one of the spots that you would have gotten. Well, now it sounds like that might not be there, so you're going to have to wait even longer to see if there's going to be an opportunity there. And by the, I just don't want to wait, and then look up, and all of a sudden you're by yourself again.
And
because here's the thing. If Memphis says no to this invite, other schools are not. They're going to go, because it makes a lot of sense to go. I understand that, yes, you got to figure out travel expenses. You've got to figure out the distance and all these things. There are some assurances that needed to be done. You've got to make sure it financially makes sense. I also believe, though, that the officials at the University of Memphis are doing all of those things. They're not going to accept this bid unless it makes sense financially. So I'm going to trust them.
They're
going to
do their homework.
I'm going to trust them. And if the decision is to go, I am in full support of it, because to me, it makes the most sense to go. It makes the most sense to go. I don't want to wait and look up and be the last one standing there.
And can we be honest about the move to the Big East? I know it dissolved and it wasn't a power conference. And you ended up in the American, and that's what the Big East became. I get all of that. But is anybody going to argue with me that that move with it dissolving and not being what you wanted, is anybody going to argue that that wasn't a better move for the University of Memphis long term? That's exactly what they needed to do. The AAC was better than what the current Conference USA is. That's what they were in before.
Yes.
They're still in a better position, right? Even though that didn't turn out exactly how you wanted it to turn out. They still get more money per year in the AAC. They still have better scheduling in the AAC than what they were going to have if they were left behind in the Conference USA. Like, that move even was the smart move and the right move at the time.
I don't understand.
And still to this day, it has aged to be the right move.
I agree. I do not understand those trying to make the argument that the schedule would not be significantly better in the new Pac-12 than it is right now. I don't understand it. Some people are being like, well, is Boise State really that much? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it
is. And Rice and UAB? Yes. Of course.
Yes. It's night and day difference. I do not understand the argument there trying to say, well, is it really that much better than the American now? Yes.
It's not like getting into the Big 12 where you're playing like all the
way. It's much better.
Where you're going to get that Houston game revamped and Oklahoma State. It's not like that. But at least it's a step in the right direction. Everybody you talk to, when you look at that conference, they will say that that conference and what they're trying to build in the Pac-12 is better. Why would you not?
The best of the
why
rest.
Would you not jump for better? You need to jump for better. You need to aim higher for yourself. Whether it's you view it as just a slightly improved move, or if you view it as a massively improved move, it's an improved move. It's something that you feel like is better for you as far as scheduling is concerned and TV revenue. So you make that jump, ultimately. That's what you should do.
What type of TV revenue do you think they'd be able to get from a new deal with the Pac-12?
I don't know. That's a great question. That's the question that needs to be answered before you make the move.
It would be better long-term, TV-wise, revenue-wise, to do this move and to just trust that that deal is going to work out, or to stay in the American and hope, cross your fingers, that they're not going to just gut you in 2031.
I think that without question, the Pac-12 will get a better TV deal.
And that's the answer for me. That matters.
There's just like when you bring in Tulane and Memphis and Boise State and San Diego State, and you have teams that have been in the Power 5 before in Washington State and Oregon State, you just have more powers. You have more, more national eyes on it, which ultimately equals more TV revenue. So yeah, I think that the TV revenue would be higher than the AAC. But again, like, it's about offsetting travel costs, offsetting the buyout number, and all those types of things. That's the problem you run into, and that's what the University of Memphis is going to have to do their homework on. And I expect them to do their homework on it.
Right.
I expect them to understand the implications of stepping into the Pac-12. It'd be really dumb for them not to cross their T's and dot their I's when it comes to making this type of move. But ultimately, to me, based on all the reports I've seen, the ACC seems to be stabilizing at the moment with Clemson and Florida State. It doesn't seem like there's another better option. You take the best option out there, and the best option to me, if you get the invite, is the Pac-12.
Again, we say it all the time, don't let perfect get in the way of good. This is a good move for the University of Memphis. I understand that there are some risks involved, but those risks don't outweigh the potential benefits for me, just because I am so fearful of being the team left behind again. I don't want to be that team. And if you said no to this invite, you will be that team, and you will be stuck in a very bad American conference.
Here's the other part of it. I know that, like, at the top of the conference here in the AAC, it's Memphis and Tulane, and every single year you feel like one of those two schools can win the American Athletic Conference. If you step into the Pac-12, you'll still have a shot to go win that conference.
Absolutely.
It's not like you're just going to fall to the bottom. You're not just going to be the cellar dweller every single year. You will have a serious opportunity to go win that conference as well, because you are, you know, sort of in lockstep with those programs. You probably do a lot better than most of them in the NIL department. You bring in good talent. And I think the other part of the bringing in talent conversation, when you widen your footprint.
I was just about to ask.
And put yourself out on the West Coast a little bit more, get more eyeballs on your program. You start winning games against the Oregon States and Washington States and Boise States of the world. I think that more recruits and more talent could look at that and say, well, hey, maybe it's okay to go over there by the Mississippi River. Maybe it's okay to move a little bit out east and go to this program because they have it going on the football field.
Absolutely, and I think that the University of Memphis has shown, too, that you can have success getting to the NFL coming from Memphis. There are plenty of players right now in the NFL that were from the University of Memphis. So, yeah, to be honest, I hope it happens. I understand the risk. I understand the hesitation. We talked about it yesterday, and I understand some of the pessimism that might be there. Is Memphis has had, they've gotten the short end of the stick a lot in the past. I get it. That being said, a lot of very good things have happened for the University of Memphis within the last 10 years. So it's okay to maybe have the idea of maybe it works out.
But I going back to your original thing where a lot of the pessimism comes from with the Big East and how it sort of fell in on itself and became the American, like that to me is a losing argument because ultimately you still ended up in a better position than you were previously in Conference USA. Like, so I don't know if that's a winning argument to me. If you're arguing that you stepped into a conference, it fell in, and it was not all that you hoped it was going to be, you do need to think about the TV revenue that still followed and the position that Memphis is in from making that move. Look at how much better that football program is since making that move. Just sort of keep your wits about you when we're having this conversation. I understand the hesitation, but I think you need to think these things through a little bit more. It's better scheduling, likely more TV money, and you have a bigger footprint. Those things to me, check, check, check. We should go ahead and make this move as soon as they get invited.
And I'm going to invest in a local coffee company because we will have to stay up a little bit later to watch Memphis football games.
Yes,
so,
that's fair.
I'm going to invest. If there is a local coffee out there that wants $5 of investment, give me a call. That's about my budget right now. Moving on. Mel Kiper Jr. went on an all-time rant about Bryce Young and his treatment by the Panthers. Here it is. Mel Kiper Jr. nailed it. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
He's a little bit of a psycho. I mean, good God.
He incredible rant.
Very fast, but a very good rant. And I think he nailed it. Not an overreaction. I've been telling you this. This is a problem with the Panthers organization under David Tepper. It didn't matter if Bryce Young was a quarterback or not. It could have been Andy Dalton. It could have been anybody. I mean, you had Sam Darnold there, and he wasn't able to get anything done of meaning. David Tepper's a terrible owner. They have the worst record in the NFL since he took over. And I don't know how everybody's going after Bryce Young. This is the biggest bust in the history of the NFL. Sure, it may age that way, but I don't think it's through all the fault of Bryce Young. Has he been bad on the field? Yes, but he doesn't have anyone to throw to. His O-line's still not good. And by the way, stop looking up PFF grades. They really make me mad. Pro Football Focus, for people that are involved in this, I see a lot of people out there that are in the know say, well, they have the fifth best pass pro grade. And according to Pro Football Focus, if you watch the game, you see that Bryce Young is running, wild because he has no protection. They just are not a good organization. Bryce Young has gotten the short end of the stick here, and sure, maybe he needs to sit behind Andy Dalton for a couple of weeks. But at the same time, this is not through fault of his own. I know he's short. I know we had questions about him coming out of Alabama. But you don't just go from being a Heisman who can get through all your reads to one of the worst quarterbacks overnight. Right? We saw what he was able to accomplish at Alabama. You know that he's got talent still there. And it's just amazing to me to see guys like Stephen A. Smith come out and say he's worse than Jamarcus Russell. This is the worst bust in the history of the NFL. We got to learn from our past. We understand that situation matters more than the talent when it comes to NFL quarterbacking. And he got put in the worst situation in the National Football League, arguably in the last 20 years, certainly the last decade.
Yeah, that's where, in the rant, the one thing I did disagree with is that some people were saying it was a good system for
infrastructure.
Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. What infrastructure? The infrastructure was non-existent when he got there. And at the same time, correct me if I'm wrong, I just never expected Bryce Young to be some MVP-winning quarterback. The biggest bust in the history of the NFL seems just wildly unfair.
He's a number one overall pick, and they traded a lot for him.
I guess so, but when the trade happened, that's a little much for
that's
Bryce
their
Young.
Fault.
I don't think a single person expected him to live up to the price of the trade.
It's another example, like that trade in general is another example of the Panthers being inept. You know, it's still not on Bryce Young. That's their fault for making that stupid trade and giving up DJ Moore and four picks and a first overall pick for Bryce Young. That's not Bryce Young's fault. They overpaid for him. That is directly on the Panthers and David Tepper and everybody in that organization.
It is actually nuts when the stat was coming out yesterday. Daniel Jones, 65 starts. Bryce Young 18, and it's like that's all he got.
Now here's the thing: he has 2-16 in his starts.
Yeah, well, but the whole team stinks.
Yes, and he's struggling too. Like if you've watched him in the first two games, him being short has definitely shown. Like,
he's missing some throws.
He's missing.
For sure.
He's missing guys because he's got pressure in his face. He's uncomfortable. He has to roll out of the pocket. You know, these athletes are different at this level. It's just changed for him, and it's just frustrating to me to see that we can't learn from our past with quarterbacks. There's some quarterbacks that have completely, you know, hurt themselves. Johnny Manziel and Jamarcus Russell come to mind. Jamarcus Russell couldn't stop drinking lean. Johnny Manziel, he would show up to practice drunk and on cocaine. You know, you have some guys that completely kill themselves before they even have a chance to be good in the National Football League. But more times than not, the situation that people are that quarterbacks at this level are dropped into really makes or breaks their career. And I think for Bryce Young, it has broken his career at this point. Well, this organization is so miserable to hold it directly on his head to get the Panthers out of the cellar. It's kind of embarrassing. And I thought that we know better at this point. I thought that we have learned through the years that you have to be in a good situation to be a successful quarterback, especially as a rookie and a second year player.
What's the point of benching him? What's the point of it? Because either he's going to figure it out, or he doesn't, and you get the number one pick, and you can draft a quarterback.
I don't
understand the benefit of benching him. Well, Andy Dalton certainly isn't the future of your organization.
I mean, I don't think the Panthers are fully out on Bryce Young, so they probably want to sit him down, let him, you know, learn behind, see Andy Dalton get some reps, and then, you know,
see Andy
forward.
Dalton die.
Yeah, yeah. See Andy Dalton get some reps and then move forward from there. I don't think they're out on Bryce Young altogether. So they just want him to sit on the bench and maybe gain some confidence that he's lost over the past year and a half.
We want to give you some confidence, Bryce. We're taking away your starting job.
I don't know. I don't know. It goes back to a badly
run. Step into my office. You're effing fired.
In the end of the day, it goes back to just being a badly run franchise, and Bryce Young is, you know, bearing the brunt for the issues that franchise has run in since David Tepper took over.
Have you seen the restaurant where Tepper, he had the incident with the guy who the sign said, please, for the love of God, let somebody else draft this year or something like that. Have you seen the new sign that they have?
No.
They're keeping a tally of Panthers wins and then Matt Rhule, Baker Mayfield,
yes,
Sam Darnold wins.
It's
just 10 out of 10 pettiness. Well done.
Yep.
Well done. Very quickly, we have one more. Eli Manning is officially on the Pro Football Hall of Fame ballot. We know he has two Super Bowls, but debates have raged on about his career and if it is Hall of Fame worthy. Eli Manning is a borderline Hall of Famer at best. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
I'm saying overreaction, but not because I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I think he's a no-doubt Hall of Famer.
I 100% agree.
There
yes.
just should be no questions about this. And I know here in Memphis, and you know, there's a lot of people that you know played that like teams that played against them, whether it's the Cowboys or the Eagles or whatever. Patriots fans certainly that want to hold him out and say, well, he only had the two Super Bowl runs. Well, he had two Super Bowl runs against the best that there ever was.
The greatest
and
team.
Tom Brady. And he was phenomenal through those entire playoffs with wild card teams. He's great. He's 10th overall, 10th all-time in passing yards. He's 10th all-time in passing touchdowns. He has the name with the clout. He's got the Super Bowls. He's got the Pro Bowls. He didn't necessarily get a bunch of All-Pros because it was a quarterback-heavy, really good quarterback league that he was playing in. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, you know, you keep going to Ben Roethlisberger, you keep going down the list.
Peyton?
It was Peyton. It was really hard to break through and be an All-Pro.
Yeah.
He is a no-doubt Hall of Famer in my mind. I know there's some people that say, you know, besides the two Super Bowls, you know, he was kind of a middling quarterback at best. He had some 5-11 years. He had some struggles. But at the same time, you get two Super Bowls, you have the Manning name, you put yourself in a top 10 list for passing yards and passing touchdowns, you get the nod from me. He may not get it on the first ballot, and I completely understand that, but it's not borderline. He is a no-doubt Hall of Famer in my mind, and I do appreciate him on the Manning cast as well. I like Eli Manning. I like
100%.
Eli Manning a lot.
When he made Peyton break down the clips of him throwing interceptions his rookie season with Belichick, just well done. Great. Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer.
Yes, it's not borderline.
To be honest, I've never really understood the other argument. I'm like, okay, he's had a couple bad seasons, but ask the Giants how they've been without him.
You know what bothers me about the argument is I think it really has to do with Did you ever consider him the best quarterback in the National Football League?
No, but there's a lot of Hall of Famers that aren't that.
Yes, but also, again, we just talked about the quarterbacks he had to compete against to be the best quarterback in the NFL.
Fun
His
game.
Brother, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers. It was hard as hell to be the best quarterback in the National Football League at that time.
You drop him into the NFL right now. Where is he?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know. That's tough. I think he's
got top five.
I think he's got better habits.
Top seven.
He's got a lot better habits than a lot of these younger guys. He'd be able to take the checkdowns a little bit better. But I don't know. That's a tough. That's a really hard conversation to have right now because we've morphed the quarterback position to a certain extent. We do take some sort of statuesque quarterbacks like Eli Manning was. Pocket passers, but I think a lot more people want the legs to go with the arm.
God, you're no fun.
Point. I don't know,
just
though.
Just give me an answer.
I mean, if you dropped him in his prime, he'd be a top 10 quarterback in the National Football
League. I'll take
it. Now. There's no doubt in my mind. I don't see why he wouldn't be better than like a Dak Prescott or something like, or Jared Goff.
It would be around that. Yeah, a little bit better than Goff.
Yeah, but he's a different quarterback than what we draft into the National Football League right now. We draft a lot of guys that can make plays off platform. He never did that. that was not Eli's forte. But he should be a Hall of Famer. May not get in first ballot, but he's a no-doubter in my mind. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we have to get to the Wednesday guest, talking some college football. We'll talk the Pac-12. We'll talk a little bit of Week 3, move into Week 4 with Colton Denning from Two Stripes CPD. He's next. Colton Denning writes college football words for Two Stripes CPD. Make sure you go follow them at Two Stripes CPD, but also follow him on X at Dubsco. He joins every single week. Colt, what's happening, brother?
It's lovely over here on the west side, Gaber. How is it in Memphis?
It's all right. It's all right. We may have to come out there, though, here relatively soon. You've seen the Pac-12 news, right?
Yeah, I have. I'm very interested to hear your takes, and I've seen some of what you've said and heard some of what you've said, but I have probably differing opinions than maybe you or people in Memphis do.
Yeah, no, I do want to hear your opinions on this, but we may, if Memphis ends up getting the invite and taking the invite from the Pac-12, we may have to schedule a yearly trip or a bi-yearly or every other year trip to Corvallis, meet in Corvallis or something like that. Potentially
could be Corvallis. I'm waiting to see if they include San Jose State in this.
Okay, that would be close. I'd come
San
to you.
San Jose State's they're undefeated right now, so hopefully they can keep it up. And there's nothing like Seth Q Stadium at night, unmatched.
And then we could also meet in my parents moved out to San Diego. We'd have a place to stay. We could go out to San Diego, watch the Aztecs
I'm
versus the Tigers.
Game. I'm always game to go to the 619. That's one of my favorite places.
No, but here's my opinion on it. If Memphis gets the invite, they should go just because the TV revenue will be higher. You increase your footprint because the geographic, is as much as I hate it, the geographic lines are completely down on all these conferences. And I think you put yourself in the best of the rest category, probably the fifth best conference. And you put I just think you're in this conference in the AAC. We had a buddy by the name of Jeff Calkins who joins on Tuesday and Thursday. He said it's a life raft with a hole in it that they have yet to plug. No one knows what to do. With the Pac-12 or Pac-6 at this moment, they have a life raft that may be a little bit bigger, but also they sprung a leak, but they've covered that leak at this current moment. It just feels like a better situation, ultimately, for Memphis to end up in. I know it's weird. And I know it's strange to think about Memphis in the Pac-12 going out west, and the travel costs may be a whole lot. But for a lot of us here in Memphis, I just feel like the AAC is a dying conference, and getting out of it by any means necessary seems to be the overwhelming take.
That's one thing I will not disagree with. If you're Memphis or any of those other schools and you kind of get this life raft, you have to do it, and it's nothing. My objection to it has nothing to do with the schools like Memphis, who, if they're going to get that offer and it's going to be a better situation, you absolutely go. I would like to see administrators and decision makers have a little bit of shame and decide to name it something else other
right.
than just taking the flex seal on it and just slapping the Pac-12 or Pac whatever it is name on it. But like you said, you got to, if you're one of these schools, you get the opportunity to make a move like that, you kind of have to do it, because we've seen schools who have waited or you know, missed out on their turn and they get left in the dust. It waits for nobody.
Yeah, and here's the truth of it, and I know you stand for this, I stand for this. The lack of regionality is very frustrating. But, you know, for Memphis or for teams that may get invited to this thing, it's just like I can't worry about that right now. I have to do what's best for me. I have to look myself in the mirror and decide if this is worth it, and I think ultimately it is. But the lack of regionality, I know that's something that bothers you.
100%. And that, and like, one of my least favorite feelings in the world, and it's one of those things where it's like not serious enough to cost you your life, is, but it's just so annoying and I hate it, is when you get water in your sock. And realignment news during the season is like water
yes.
in my sock.
Oh, yes.
And I can't get it out until the end of the year. And I like, I really do think, because this just happens every year now, it's like we have 8 months of off season where this news could have dropped. And it's like week two, well, week three, and they're like, hey, everything's changing. And it's just like, man, we have 8 months of this, and now I got to wait till the off season to not talk about this anymore.
Well,
to be fair,
I think Oregon State and Washington State knew exactly what they were doing with the announcement and the timing of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
Oregon State's playing Oregon. Washington State's able to get over top of Washington in probably their biggest televised, biggest game of the year. They knew exactly the timing. It was very strategic.
Yeah, and you got to give them credit for that, especially if you're, you know, if you're Washington State. I know that was, you know, quote unquote neutral, but it's still a game in Seattle, which is basically Washington's home base. But for Washington State to win that game the way they did there at the end with Washington weirdly calling a speed option to the short side of the field
yeah.
there to try to score. And then on the back of that news, a pretty good week to be a Coug.
Yeah, 100%. That was a pretty good week to be a Tiger, too. Can we talk about this? Tigers get over top in Doak, 20-12. And you did a little write-up. You talked about Florida State first, and we may get to that in a second. But you said, for the Tigers, this win indisputably puts them in the driver's seat for the Group of Five spot in the college football playoff. They played it a little too safe in the second half, though I can't blame them for being confident in the strategy of not doing anything stupid and making DJU beat them. And really, the story of that game, if you watched from start to finish, was Jordan Hankins just lighting DJU up the entire second half. He made himself some money. I have no doubt about that. But the balls of steel on that guy, just to bring 6- and 7-man pressures in winning time, was impressive as hell.
And why wouldn't you, based off of what not only they saw that whole game through those first three quarters and then what they did in the fourth quarter defensively, but from what they saw from Florida State's offense in the first 2 weeks, you know, if they beat you over the top, it's going to be a miracle. And then something that we've talked about with Florida State those first two games leading into this past one was how it wasn't just DJU, we saw in a couple third downs, tight ends dropping passes, receivers running the wrong routes or not getting open and not settling into open space. You know, if you bring pressure on those guys, they're going to fold. And I think there's a difference between being overly aggressive and doing too much and doing what Hankins and Memphis did, where that's not being aggressive. I think that's playing into how you should play of, hey,
right,
we're going to make these guys try to beat us, and we know that unless something crazy happens, they can.
Yeah, but 6 on a Hail Mary, we can admit, that's aggressive. That's egregious.
It's pushing it for sure.
Yeah, for sure, but it made sense, and he couldn't even get the – I mean, he's got a cannon, DJ. You rolling out of the pocket, almost got it to the goal line, but he couldn't quite get it there. That was just – I thought it was a well – coached game, aggressive game plan from the University of Memphis. Offensively, I want to see them get a little bit more going. But I don't know if you have the history here, but you know, when you look at defenses in Memphis, this is the best defense, in my opinion, that we've seen since my first year at the University of Memphis in 2014. I mean, this is fun for a lot of Memphis fans to see. Now, on the Florida State side of things, good God. Like, you one of your takeaways, and I'm going to make you explain it, but you said, I can't explain what's happening at Florida State. The drop passes, DJU's not good enough. That defense is solid, but they're not the greatest. It was amazing to see, you know, I talked to Mike Norvell in the offseason. He talked about this O-line. We're returning 4 or 5 starters, and, you know, we really think that we're going to be able to run the ball and establish the run. Memphis bullied them the whole game, 12 tackles for loss and 4 sacks. It's not really explainable, but do your best.
We said this, we talked about this last week, and something that I really hate doing, and I try to never do it, whether I'm writing or talking with you or, you know, podcasting, whatever, is say stuff like, well, it looks like Florida State's locker room is in shambles.
Right.
Because I'm not around it. I'm not a beat writer. I don't know. I don't talk to people who know. But just from the outside looking in, you can't tell me with all of the problems that they've had that it's just a once-in-a-lifetime football thing. It just doesn't seem that way because, like we said, we see players dropping passes. We see them throwing short, throwing two-yard routes on third and eight. They just don't look comfortable. Guys are muffing punts. Guys are dropping wide-open screen passes on third and twos. It just, whatever it is, it just seems like this team does not have it. And, I know that Mike Norvell is a good enough coach, and you know it especially more than I do, that I don't think that this is who he is as a coach or this is what the Florida State program is under him. But this is, like, one of the worst I think we've seen in the past decade, like next to when Notre Dame went 4-8 that one season in whatever it was, 2016 or 2017. It just seems like whatever can happen wrong is going to happen wrong for Florida State. And at this point, you know, for them to get out of the season with 5 wins, I think would be a huge building block for them. But even that seems almost impossible.
Yeah, I think 3-2-1 Noel needs to get that Red Solo Cup out because the curse is on, right? There's no other way to put it. Like some of the plays, like you ended up putting it out, the drop screen pass on third down that probably would have been a touchdown. Like the curse just seems so real right now at Florida State.
Yeah, and at that point in the game, there's 3.5 minutes left. It's 3rd and 1. You got the ball on the 42.
And it was the first
line.
Half play, still. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that play goes for a touchdown. Then it's 10-7 because it was a 10-0 game at that point. And, you know, hopefully if you're Florida State, you go into the locker room and you're down 10-7 and you say, hey, we probably got outplayed, but we made a ton of mistakes and we're only down 3. This is our chance to not only turn the game around, but to turn our season around. And we saw how that played out. And I think that Memphis just, they did play it safe, but they also just kind of kept them at arm's length. And I compared it to kind of a, you know, weirdo version of trestle ball where it was just like, hey, let the other guys make the mistakes.
Yep.
And we won't do anything stupid and we'll get out of here with a win. And if you're Memphis, even if Florida State finishes with 2 losses or 2 wins, excuse me, nobody is going to look at that game at the end of the year when it comes to, you know, playoff talk and say, oh, well, Florida State sucks. At the end of the day, they still went into Doe Campbell and they won, and that's all that matters.
Yep, 100%. Now, LSU, South Carolina, this is another takeaway you had, was a glorious disaster. And I view this through two lenses. One, I think South Carolina lost themselves the game. When you look at Shane Beamer at the end of that game running Rocket Sanders for 1 yard on first down when you had, what, 18 to 20 seconds left, it's like, dude, try to get a little bit closer. Don't play for a 45-yard field goal with a college kicker on the line just to tie the game. Kind of ridiculous. But then the penalties were massive. They had 13 of them, and they had 2 touchdowns called back on penalties. Did you view that through the lens of South Carolina lost the game, or did you think that there was a refereeing issue in that game?
I think it's probably right down the middle. I mean, the second call on the that last pick six.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number 1. Horse track pick number 1.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first 3 grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
They're going to call that every time, especially if it's against
a game. But I got to be honest, I hate that they call that because he becomes a defender at that point, but it is lay of the law. It is exactly what they put in the rule book.
Yeah, I don't like it either, and you want to see guys in between the whistle if you're not just head hunting. if guys are just blocking and it's not completely egregious, then they're just out there playing football. But I think South Carolina, you have to look at it from a sense of, okay, if there were a couple of bad calls and some of them were in tight spots, that's one thing. But to have so many penalties, and when you really outplayed LSU to the degree that they did, you can blame it on the referees all you want, but that's a game where you're going to look back at the end of the season, and South Carolina could still have a pretty damn good year given what they have on that defensive front, and it looks like some of their you know, playmakers, even with a backup quarterback, came in, and they gave LSU everything they could handle. But they're always going to look back at that game and think, man, what could have been if we won that? And I think that has to be their biggest takeaway. And I think there's a theme or a pattern with Shane Beamer a little bit where his team does get up for these games. We saw what they did a couple years ago, knocking both Clemson and Tennessee basically out of the playoff in 2022. So they're always going to be ready, but are they going to be composed in those moments? That's where I think kind of is the missing margins with Shane Beamer's program right now.
So when we look around the country, not just in the South Carolina game, although people can question the call with the hit on Garrett Nussmeier after that pick that ultimately had a pick six called back, we did have the Florida targeting where he just hit a guy in the back and they called a targeting there. We had the sack by Indiana on UCLA that got called for roughing the passer when it just, I don't even know how you even come close to that. We had the Georgia Kentucky game where a Georgia defender got called for roughing the passer that was questionable. Do we have an officiating problem or more so a rule book problem in college football? Because this is becoming a little bit strange. You know, the amount of judgment calls I think we have with targeting and, you know, roughing the passer, that type of call that you know gets called every single weekend. I think we may have more of a rule book problem than officiating problem, because officiating crews seem to have one arm tied behind their back with all these judgment calls they have to make.
I think it's 1,000,000% a rule book problem, because you even you know, you look around, and I do hits of the week videos every single week, hits of the week out right now on youtube.com/Colton Denning, and it was an extremely physical week. And if you watch, I'm sure people saw that hit in the Utah State game where the dude basically got corkscrewed around. And 99 times out of 100, you're getting at least a flag on that in a review. And there was no call. And then they look back at it, and the guy hit him with his shoulder. It was great. Clean hit. It just looked really ugly. But then you watch some of these other games, and it is a judgment call. And that's why I've always been on the side of, they need to get rid of the ejection. And if you want to make it, you know, you get a guy who has two targeting penalties in a game and gets ejected, that's fine. But it needs to be something where officials know when it's egregious. We all know when it's somebody who's just completely headhunting, going after somebody and basically trying to kill him. Then you can say, hey, you eject. But this, you know, when guys are just getting thrown out for just trying to make a football play, when you're trying to tackle a running back or a quarterback and they lower their head as you're trying to put your face mask into their chest, I don't really know what you're supposed to do. And there are so many judgment calls at this point. I don't think it's a problem to add another when it comes to, hey, if it's too egregious, the officials just say, we think that was egregious, we're throwing him out. And if it's not, then it's just a 15-yard penalty like it is in the NFL.
Yeah. Now, your player of the week, Travis Hunter, I agree with you. The 28-9 win for Colorado over Colorado State was phenomenal. They looked really, really good. And I thought that on the defensive side of the ball is the most impressive thing. And I hate to say it, ever since Shiloh Sanders went out, it seems like they're playing a lot better defense. But that's neither here nor there. Travis Hunter, though, 13 catches, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns, 5 tackles, 1 PBU, and a 38-yard interception return on defense. I know that it's very unlikely that he ends up winning the Heisman, especially with where we think this Colorado team will be, maybe 6-6, 5-7, something like that. But if we're being honest about what the Heisman is supposed to be, best player in the country, I don't know if there's really a particularly good argument against him.
There isn't. And when you look at it, he's second in the nation in receptions. He's seventh in receiving yards. He's second in receiving touchdowns. And he's doing this while playing basically every defensive
123 snap, total snaps the other day.
Not only that, but making plays on defense. And guys aren't throwing at him, and when they are, and we saw what happened to Braden Fowler and Nicolosi when he did, that wasn't just like, oh, he threw him a duck. It wasn't a great throw, but Travis Hunter's ball skills on that were unbelievable, and then he's returning the balls for, I think, 38 yards, and he's running down that running back in the fourth quarter when he should be gassed. And people can say all they want, oh, it's Colorado State. There's a reason that guys don't do this, regardless of who it is or what the competition is. And so what he's doing right now is something that we legitimately have not seen. In being so invested in the history of the sport, like me and yourself and other people who love it are, even when you look back at somebody like Charles Woodson, he right. wasn't playing offense to the extent no. that Travis Hunter is. Not even close. Champ Bailey was for a year, I think, in 1998 with Georgia, but he still was taking snaps off. He wasn't on the field every play offensively. There were games, bowl games, like against Virginia in the Peach Bowl, I think it was, but he wasn't doing that. Chris Gamble was kind of doing it with Ohio State, but he wasn't doing it to the same degree. So what Travis Hunter's doing right now is so unprecedented. And every single time we get into the offseason, we hear people talk about, oh, man, I miss the days of the superstars like Reggie Bush or Devin Hester or all these guys we all love, revere, and adore. And, oh, the game isn't the same as it was. Where's that gone? It's right here, man. We're watching it right in front of us every single week. And he's going to be in the NFL next year. And I'm sure he's going to be awesome and it's going to be fun to watch. But you're watching something unbelievable and historic to where 20 years from now you're going to say, damn, man, I wish we had another Travis Hunter.
Yep. Yep.
And it's something that people just need to cherish because it's awesome. And at the very least, if he continues on this pace, he has to be in New York. But honestly, if he keeps doing this, he should win the Heisman.
He should, but I don't think it's going to end up that way because we give it to the best quarterback on one of the best teams. That's usually how it works out. Now, the one thing that does strike me about Travis Hunter is you brought up Champ Bailey and you brought up Charles Woodson. We knew they were going to be DBs in the NFL. We're still having debates about Travis Hunter and what he's going to play in the National Football League. That tells you he is unbelievably good, top 10 caliber at both positions, and we've never quite had that. Now, last thing I want to talk to you about, USC versus Michigan this weekend on CBS at 2:30. We have the CBS game. USC looks damn good this year, and because it's really because their defense is starting. DeAnton Lynn stepping and having that defense step in the right direction has made all the difference for them. They're number 11 in the country. What is that going to be like? Because you did put this out there when you were hyping up this spot. You said you wanted to talk about what it's going to be like to be a USC fan this weekend on the road at Michigan.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun if you're me, or if you're an Ohio State fan, if you're somebody who doesn't like Michigan. I think they finally made the right move in deciding that they're going to go with Alex Orji as their quarterback. You know, Davis Warren is what he is. There were some just brutal throws against Arkansas State, and that was a game where if that team isn't Arkansas State, they're probably winning. And so just going with Alex Orji, and you see the upside with that offense compared to what Davis Warren does, I think is a good move. Colston Loveland, the tight end, maybe the best tight end in the country.
Right.
It doesn't seem clear whether he's going to play this game or not. If he's not playing, I don't really know where Michigan is getting their offense from because they haven't been able to really run the ball consistently against any defense they've played this year, which is basically Texas, and I don't see with what USC has shown up.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.